Hello, everyone. I'm Salil Tripathi here from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. And I'm here in Stockholm today. And I'm talking to Mariam Memar Siddiqui. She is the founder and co-founder and co-director of Tavana, which is a tech organization. And we are meeting at the Stockholm Internet Forum. And among the things we are going to talk about is the whole idea of granting greater access to the internet and what it means. Surely, Mariam, giving access to internet to a lot of people can only be a good thing, right? What's wrong with that?
It's a great thing. We need to be careful about how we go about it. Just like education is a force that can be used for good, it can be used for bad. Simply providing education isn't going to be the answer. Some people say that everyone should have the right to an internet. Mm-hmm. Well, that itself is a complicated proposition.
Why?
Well, because people have individual rights as individuals. It's not that they have a right to a technology or a newspaper, per se, or even water. Mm-hmm. It's that they have a human dignity, and they have a certain set of universal human rights, such as freedom of expression or freedom of association, freedom from intrusion by the government, and those rights need to be protected on the internet. And of course,
but doesn't the government do that? I mean, isn't it the government's responsibility to protect rights in any case?
It ought to be, but the thing is that there are governments such as the Chinese government or the Iranian government that actually take pride in the fact that their population has a large penetration of internet. You know, there are many people who are accessing the internet. But the thing is, it's not a free internet, and it's not a safe internet, and it's not an open internet. And that's what we really need to make the internet part and parcel of greater human development and human freedom.
So how do you do that? What can citizens in these countries do to empower themselves? Because if they do not have access to the information and the technology that you suggest are needed to protect themselves, how can they do that? Because otherwise they remain vulnerable, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Well, there are plenty of technology tools, so the internet kind of comes to the assistance of the internet, if you will. There are tools to circumvent, for example, the firewalls or the censorship that these governments create. There are tools that protect from surveillance by these governments. But ultimately, human activity, human organization, the will for freedom is what is going to make these societies more open and more respectful of equality, justice, fairness, access to the things that people need to help themselves make a better life for themselves.
So this is all great as far as protecting the people's rights are concerned, and it's also great from the perspective of making sure that they have access to the net. The question is, what role do you see companies to play? Because typically, the intermediary in this case is company. It could be a company like Facebook, which creates social space, or the company that builds the pipelines, you know, on which the data travels. What are their human rights responsibilities in this regard?
Well, the human rights responsibilities for for-profit corporations, and they tend to be very large entities when we're talking about the internet and internet infrastructure, for the large part, are voluntary. So voluntary associations between these large companies to ensure better practices. So for example, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, these kinds of companies getting together and saying, well, we won't do that in China. Unfortunately, until now, this has been largely a voluntary code of conduct or a voluntary code of ethics.
So what you've said so far shows that internet can be a great thing, but people have to be protected. Now, one of the interesting things is that internet comes to people through for-profit companies, whether it is a company like Facebook, which allows you to have access to people's social media streams and so on, or Google, which allows the search functionality, or even companies that provide the pipelines and the backbone of the internet. Now, in that kind of a context, what kind of responsibilities do you think companies have to protect human rights?
Yeah, well, here we're talking about very large for-profit entities. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes to internet infrastructure or even social media, the chances of something of small being of value or of being shared, by definition, if it's small, then it's not big enough. So
these are very large entities that are making huge, huge amounts of money. Now, fortunately, there has been some activity between them, and a healthy competition, I even think, between, say, Google and Facebook, or Google and Microsoft, to be better ethically, to have social policies, legal standards, things they won't engage in.
And they're also reporting a lot of what the government tells them to do and
right.
whether they comply or not.
Exactly.
Yes, through reporting.
Exactly.
Yes.
And also some corporate social responsibility initiatives. For example, Google provides a project called Project Shield, where they protect entities like ours, actually, from government attacks, DDoS attacks that were incessant.
That's a denial of service, yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Or they provide free advertising on Google products
yes.
for entities that, you know, have a human rights mission, essentially. And, you know, that I do see that taking off in the future even more, and there being some kind of a competition between entities about that, to have more standards in terms of what kinds of actions and policies they'll have in repressive regimes. But and, you know, perhaps it's not a bad thing that it's not regulated, but for the most part, this is a voluntary code of conduct. You know, there is no international institution, for example, that's going to say that if you're operating in a repressive regime, then you cannot sell surveillance equipment or something like
mm-hmm.
that. That's where we are.
Yeah. So as you look ahead, do you see a bleak future for the internet? Or do you see a divided internet, that there'll be some people who will have an internet where their rights are respected and they can speak freely, say in Scandinavia, and there'll be another internet where the state will pretty much control it and companies will be compliant in it?
Yeah.
Or is there a nirvana that people talk about, that, you know, freedom for all and, you know, one internet for everyone
mm-hmm.
to do everything, which is the aim of this conference,
right.
Is that realizable?
Well, yeah, right now we very much have not the same internet for
yeah.
everybody, and we have, particularly in repressive regimes, not just an unfree internet, but uses of the internet to spread disinformation,
right.
to conduct surveillance, to create propaganda. So, for example, in Iran, social media is illegal for people, and yet the state itself uses social media, particularly in its relations with the outside world,
right.
charm offensives and trying to... basically create a largely untrue impression of itself in the outside world, and counter, for example, human rights organizations that are making criticisms of what's going on in prisons or what's going on actually on the internet. So that's the reality now. Do I have a bleak outlook for the future? In the long term, no, but I think that the very traditional mechanisms like universal human rights standards, bills of human rights, constitutions, it's those very basic legal protections that are focused on the individual, in my view, that will help to make either a free internet for everyone, or will make it a really kind of a dangerous and slippery tool that can be used by nefarious agents, state and non-state actors. You know, now we have terrorist networks that make all kinds of uses of technology to infringe on rights. But I think in the end, in my view, it will be very traditional notions of what rights are and how rights are protected that will save the internet and save individuals.
One final question, since you mentioned Iran and you obviously have a deep interest in Iran. Everyone wants to do business with Iran now, right? Everybody is taking trade delegations, investment delegations there, business delegations there, deals will be signed and so on. I mean, we don't want to reopen the whole issue of sanctions
sure.
because it's beyond our powers to say anything about that. What warnings would you give companies? What precautions should they take? How is Iran different from doing business in any other country?
I would tell companies that are bound to, as you mentioned, bound to be doing new business with Iran, that they should try and make a friend of the Iranian people
mm-hmm.
for the long term.
Right.
They should see their customers, their new customers, as desiring of dignity and respect and freedom. And any deal they make with the government that forces them into a position where they treat Iranians as subjects that can just be manipulated and controlled is not going to work for them in the long term. And Iranians, they know better. And so my hope is that companies coming into the Iranian economy are going to see their long-term interest and also simply out of choice make the ethical decision.
Thank you very much, and wish you all the best for your great work, Mariam.
Thank
Thanks very much
so
indeed.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.